Hi, how are you?
You're the teacher.
Oh, we are, yes. What's happening? Oh, you. Look.
Oh, you might not get it.
Okay, thank you. Maybe somebody left it. Okay. Did you want to be the victim? Well, you can go first and then choose a name. How about that?
Well, we're going to do that. So we're going to go through the exam questions, and again, we can discuss more after as well. If you have any particular questions or questions or comments.
Okay. So for the first one, I said that the relative banding pattern is similar throughout many different animals. Because skeletal muscle is designed to generate force, and force generation is achieved by thin and thick filaments interacting in order to shorten the sarcomere. All the proteins are, they're rearranged differently because all animals are different. They need their muscles for different things. But the basic way in which they contract their muscles and use them are all the same throughout all the animals. So that's what I had for the first.
Anybody want to add anything? Kind of some comments on some people's things? So remember that diagram that we had? That was very good, thank you. Remember that diagram we had with different proteins and different parts of the banding pattern? So there's different isoforms as well that we talked about, right? And but they might have a little bit of different, some of the banding patterns, because we get super contracting muscles that we talked about as well. So that was a little point that we were mentioning as well, that there are a lot of different proteins that aren't exactly the same. Some are isoforms and some are different, but generally have that same kind of banding pattern, but a little bit in depth. You get to pick the next victim. Don't pick yourself again. No.
Emily.
Me.
Oh, Brian, Emily.
Me?
Yes. How about that? Did you answer
that? Can I just yell at everyone?
Well, either one, but our microphones are
good. All right.
Okay. So, I think essentially, I talked about, I said muscles are comprised of a number of non-contractile proteins, but they're still necessary for cell function. So mitochondria make ATP, necessary for cross-bridge cycling. The sarcoplasmic reticulum and T-tubules hold calcium storage systems that release calcium that are necessary for cross-bridge cycling and muscle contraction. Dr. Cooper added on the bottom of mine that calcium 2+ ions and ATP need to diffuse to and from the contractile elements and from the sarcoplasmic reticulum and mitochondria. And so the nuclei and the ribosomes, everything have to be close to the machinery for all of these processes to happen. So that's why in electron microscopy you can see all of the subsequent parts of the cell besides just the actin and myosin.
You know, like that thickness can't be too thick, right?
Belly.
There you go.
I know, I can't read them.
I didn't realize it was so dark, wasn't it?
I was also, after Robin sent me his, and I was like, I think I'll highlight mine, but what colors will I use? And then I have to highlight John's. All right.
Well, that was the invertebrates, long circles, right?
Yeah. Some invertebrates have very long sarcomere structures. What might this be for? I said long sarcomere slow fibers offer greater mechanical advantages for slow but increased force and purposeful closure, such as a major claw crusher in the clawed lobsters. This is complemented by more rapid closure of the minor claw, which is predominantly short sarcomere fast fiber type.
Great. So like the series element for a lot of force generation, right? So some people maybe mention that specifically, the series element that we talked about. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks. You got to pull the name.
Not that one.
Sufficient.
Annie.
Did you answer number 4?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I worked it backwards. That's okay, why I skipped so many of those.
All right.
So I said if sarcomere length is being used as a morphological index for comparison, sarcomeres growing in length would pose a problem, because if you're comparing, you have to make sure you're accounting for age, which can be tricky because different animals have different times to maturation. I said that I didn't think that sarcomeres generally grow in length in mammalian skeletal muscle. I found a study in 2010 where it didn't.
Didn't say that. So with that one part about the, it was that one model organism we talked about with the crab legs, that the muscles actually, the sarcomeres got longer and longer. Some people cited that reference that we were talking about. But I don't know if that's common in many invertebrates. I think that was kind of a, you know, an example. But a lot of the invertebrates, I don't know if anybody's really studied it. I don't know how common that really is. If you start to get in annelids and others, it might not be that way. So some people missed a little points because they didn't answer like the rest of it, like you mentioned the mammals. But somebody mentioned that they know a study where some sarcomeres did change in length. I forgot who it was during development. Is that?
They just the overlap. They didn't actually like add sarcomeres. They just the sarcomeres lengthened because of the overlap.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't really that, you know, that they got longer. But I think somebody mentioned, I don't know who it was really neat question about, as the sarcomere grows, how is it doing that during development, right? More proteins being added, maybe a new myosin or a new actin, because remember how we talked about they might come in as, you know, units, but then how does that unit getting bigger as it grows, and are there some short and some longer, or is in these crustacean model that we talked about, that's a molt, so maybe there's something triggered with the molt cycle. And a lot of regrowth happens at that same point. I don't know the answer, but that would be a neat research question. Probably can't get funded by NSF, but that would be a neat question to follow up. Thank you.
Courtney.
Did you answer this one?
I did
not.
I can do it. I
you
got
can
a super. I got a super with an X, two, three exclamation points, people.
Wait, if I wasn't a super duper.
I can do the next one, though.
You can do the next one?
Yeah, I'll do
it. Okay. So like we talked about with Dr. McCarthy, too, the number of since the number of nuclei remains constant, each myonuclei would have to increase its myonuclear domain to accommodate for the increase in the myofibrillar size. So each myonuclei is responsible for a certain percentage of cytoplasm, and as the cytoplasmic domain grows, the myonuclei have to make up for that. Five.
Oh.
Okay.
Go on.
And like Dr. Cooper talked about in last Wednesday's lecture, there's evidence to support that not all myonuclei are the same. So the myonuclei under the neuromuscular junction are different, and they're able to affect the surrounding myonuclei within the cell as the neuromuscular junctions grow and retract. There are also other mononucleated structures outside of the cell, like stem cells and macrophages, that have nuclei that are different from myonuclei.
So remember, in that fly model, that fly paper, that I think some people might have got a little confused on that one. It's not acetylcholine receptors. We use that as an example, but they're actually glutaminergic, so they have different types of glutamate subunits that actually come together and form the functional glutamate receptors. So they use that as a model, the fly Drosophila model system. And actually, some of those nuclei they've actually shown are different on the edges of the muscle fiber compared to the middle of the muscle fiber. And even during development, they can make different subunits to come together to make the glutamate receptor. So there are different isoforms of the glutamate receptors as well. And so that's kind of interesting. But just a model to understand some of those differences. Thanks.
I said, like, you can never, like, here's Vmax, but you can never actually achieve, like, Vmax because there's always going to be force produced in tissue, so, like, it's impossible for your muscles to achieve that. And then it produces zero force when it's shortening at its maximal velocity. Yeah.
How much higher is your eccentric force compared to your isometric force?
Yeah, I don't think that was like very. I think I even wrote that on my thing, but I didn't
draw that to scale very well.
Because okay. It should more like be like right there-ish, right?
1.5 to 2 times.
Yeah, I was gonna say I even wrote that. I was like, this is not drawn very like the scale very well. Because I'm pretty trash at drawing, to be completely honest. So. Okay. Brandon. But oh yeah.
Or we can go.
I can draw another one.
I didn't get a very good score, but I can do the next one.
Well, Travis is
I put stupid question. So it asks for asymmetric force and for top two and a top one fiber. I put they would be the same, assuming the PCSA was the same. And I put because this, I think this is due to forces being dependent on the number of cross bridge attachments and not concentric or ATVA's properties of the fiber.
And your Vmax is lower, just lower which?
Yes.
So you didn't draw the eccentric top point, though. I'm on the board, and you did the homework of the test, but where did you put the eccentric top point for the soldiers if I were to compare it to the past?
I put it as being the same.
Yeah. And there's not a whole lot of evidence in the world about it, but there is some that they should be about the same. Because, again, fiber typing is ATPAs and cross-bridge kinetics. And since eccentric contractions aren't really dependent on cross-bridge kinetics, but more on Titan, that the same cross-sectional area is the same eccentric force.
Allison?
I didn't really look at this question, so I'm going to get rid of it real quick.
Eight. Yeah. Okay. So power output can be defined for a muscle as force times shortening velocity. What is the power output at isometric force at maximum shortening velocity? Okay. So power output for an isometric contraction is zero and the velocity is zero. And then power can be produced at 33% Vmax, but the power output at Vmax is zero as the force is zero. Okay. Oh, there we go. Sorry, I barely looked at this question, so I'm like...
graph kind of looks like that.
Sort of.
So, yeah. I did not draw to scale at all, but yeah.
And so that's it?
Yeah. This is power. That's time. Yeah.
That's power time?
Yeah. I could draw all of it.
But on a force velocity, it comes with 33%.
Yeah. Yep. Basically. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
So why do bicycles have gears?
To make pedaling easier.
It doesn't do that. Why?
Just because.
Or it makes it harder, too.
Because.
You're supposed to pedal at 33% of your Vmax at each gear.
So you can produce optimal power at any velocity of the bike. Okay. So that's really that.
Alright.
That's really the cool thing. That's really what bikes designed to do is let you optimize your power output at whatever velocity the bike's going to.
Oh, that is my last question. Okay, I really did not look at that answer. Brandon, is he here?
I do have a question.
Brandon?
Okay,
that was
my
name
twice.
Oh.
Yeah, he volunteered first, but his name was
still here. Oh, okay. Should I pick somebody else then?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just pick somebody else. Let's see. Who do I got? Kurt.
Kurt?
Not here. Okay. Let's just see. Kate?
This isn't the first question I needed.
Okay.
This is not great, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, this one was about the tendon and the muscle dissociation. So I wrote that as the muscle shortens during contraction, the tendon does not. The muscle and tendon don't work in synchronicity, but they do work together to optimize power. For power optimization, the series and parallel elastic systems work to store energy and give it back. The elements that are in series all have to share the same load, whereas parallel elements are additive. Tendons also absorb impact and energy from the environment and transfer that energy back into the system. This is called power attenuation. In the frog, they shorten the muscle in anticipation for jumping. By doing this, the tendon absorbs the energy, and when the frog jumps, that energy is all transferred back into the system, increasing the force exerted.
Super
mm-hmm.
With three exclamation points.
Well, you got four, so I guess.
I'm
just kidding. Kerbster.
I can hear Tim. I'm like, womp, womp, womp.
It's Kirk.
Kirky.
What was the last
Kirky Mayer?
Kirky?
Kirky Mayer.
Was there a drawing component of this?
No. Yes.
Yes.
So we get better drawing.
PSA, but has longer fibers, and so it would have a faster shortening velocity, or shortening velocity. And the second one is the ECRB, has large PSA and short fibers, and it would have a larger production of force. I said to the answer to the question, I said most likely the best, based on the information we have, to contribute to wrist extension in terms of force would be a combination of both. Because of the external load, so with greater force, the ECRB would have greater power at slower velocities. On the other hand, the ECRL produces power at faster velocities. So you likely want a combination.
There's nobody left, so I'll just pick Bailey.
No, I can do
here. We can put all that in there.
I can do number 13.
I can do
12. Okay. All right. With why are Sally's cells necessary for skeletal muscle hypertrophy? I didn't know he geared this as much towards, like, including the developmental aspect as he did, probably because I didn't look at his PowerPoint. But his points were maintenance of the myonuclear domain, so you have to have satellite cell incorporation to compensate for the increased fiber length and size during development. When you knock out PAC 7, during postnatal growth, like early on, before 4 months of age, you get a decrease in CSA and muscle wet weight. I added, which he didn't like, some stuff on irradiation that was done early on, some crude measures, things, atoms. Was that the first one? Or like back, was it pre 2000 or?
I don't remember. I don't think atoms was the first one, but
no.
I don't remember how far back it goes.
There's a couple publications on it where they irradiate the leg and they do whole body, and that definitely had some effects on muscle size, and it did kill the satellite cells, so that was their claim to fame. And then the more recent publication where they knocked out satellite cells at 2 months and then overloaded the tissue, or the plantaris and TA, showed decrease in satellites and hypertrophy when you ablate satellite cells using John's mouse, the PAC7 DTA mouse. And then there's just been correlations in humans for PAC7 requirements and muscle hypertrophy. Mark Spangman, someone we collaborate with, has a couple papers on that. And then some different molecules that are required for fusion.
Great.
This is the only one I got 5 out of 5.
Go.
Hearing. Great.
Did I get this? Well, then I can take 15. I did almost right.
So the question is about possible mechanisms for blunted hypertrophic response with old age. Yeah. So, this is definitely mine. Alterations in transcriptional and translational mechanisms during aging are possible mechanisms for blunting. This is due to the change in translational capacity, such as reduced rRNA, misregulation of mTOR, poor regulation of motif-protein synthesis, and mitochondrial dysfunction. Also, there is a reduction in ribosomal density due to normal aging. This impaired ribosome biogenesis is likely the primary factor for blunting the underlying response. Additionally, there is the possibility of cellular senescence, which is very, very old age.
How old?
Like 90.
Give or take.
Okay,
13.
So this one was about mechanisms besides ribosome biogenesis that could account for increased translational capacity observed during muscle hypertrophy. So I talked about that one thing that could account for the increase in translational capacity is an alteration in the turnover of ribosomes. So if the stability of ribosomes increases, ribosomes are turning over less due to a longer half-life, and they continue to transcribe at the normal rate, you would see an increase in the ribosomal RNA. And this accumulation of RNA could be occurring instead of the true enhancement in transcription.
You want me to draw out the mTOR pathway? This is like writing out pi.
He's impressed with your ability to make
coffee.
Do you need? I have a purple one in my bag if you need one. Because Tim gave it to me, and now I need to keep it with me at all times, just in case. It's part of my job.
So you can have
official marker holder.
Is it androgen receptors, insulin, IGF, and mechano? And they can all act through PI3K or an AKT and ERK. And this phosphorylates mTOR. There's an mTOR too. And this has like 200 downstream targets. One of them is 4EBP1.
And then P70, S6 kinase. S6 kinase. And those lead to transcriptional efficiency related to ribosomes, as well as just the capacity, which I don't know the exact mechanism for that. I missed that one. But they all signal through here to lead to ribosome translation. I think they might upregulate RNA as well.
I think that was it too. He went through capacity and efficiency. That's great.
Very what good. Is that last word?
Ribosome.
Come on, Kirby.
Billy, can you tell me what AKT actually stands for?
It's it's protein kinase B. I don't know where.
AKT. You don't know anything?
Is it the adenosine?
I don't know where that came from. It was a PKB for a long time. Yeah, it just changed the AKB.
Yeah. Somebody puts it in a paper becomes law.
That's basically
keep trying to find somebody to give you the answer.
Also what I learned. All right. Bring it up the rear here.
Okay. So for 15, I wrote a lot of stuff about how myostatin acts through SMAD to inhibit AKT, but essentially what Dr. McCarthy wanted everyone to understand is that myostatin promotes protein degradation, so the increase in muscle mass following myostatin knockout shows that protein degradation has an important role in determining skeletal muscle mass. So he wanted you to, and me really, because he wrote it right here, to understand that protein degradation plays an essential role in regulating muscle mass, and myostatin will promotes protein degradation.
Do you grab my
yes.
Is S6 kinase a pathway?
What?
Is S6 kinase a pathway?
It's part of a pathway from mTOR.
Yeah.
It's also part of the pathway.
Okay,
right. Yes.
John.
Yes, he did. He did, in fact, make a note. But I don't know. He gave us two of those different charts, and they each had different, like, little inhibitors.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit confusing.
I was thinking about maybe just chase a chat with the undergrads and see if it's working.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.